off the bonus episode yesterday. We're into our regular schedule. Does this feel different because it's a normal day that we're recording?
Yeah, well, you know, listen, I've come off a show where we recorded every day. So so this 3 days a week was kind of nice. So throwing the bonus in. By the way, Bruce Cassidy was unbelievable. If you haven't heard the Cassidy show, give it a listen, because I talked to Bruce last night and Bruce had a lot of fun doing it. So that's good too. That's always a sign.
You talked to Bruce last night?
Yeah, you didn't?
Well, yeah, but we're in the same city.
Yeah. I create dialogues with people, you know, it's kind of like networking, you know?
Yeah.
He actually had some nice things to say about you. What? So once I corrected those, then we were okay. So
curious about how he phrased the nice things.
He did say you were a really brutal goalie. So that's good.
I build his team's confidence. He likes it when I'm out there.
He's amazed. He's amazed. He says, I'm amazed that he'll come out there and we'll beat him with one-timers, and he does it with a smile on his face.
I wanted to know last night, because I asked him how he watches games and his favorite announcer, or if he likes announcers, what he was doing and who he was listening to. And he had a game on, but he was listening to music at the same time.
So
that answers that. So Bruce Cassidy was great. And today we do have an announcer on, the great Sam Rosen. And this is where I give you the flowers, because this is a big thrill as a hockey fan to be able to. I'm looking forward to conversing with Sam and just listening to different tales. And it's all because of your history and your friendship.
Well, even if I wasn't a friend of Sam's, we'd have him on, because this is, you know, he arguably one of the greatest hockey announcers of all time. Of all time. And we can
He's
get
on Mount Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore's got to be a bigger mountain for me, but he deserves a ton of credit for making the game so listenable, so much fun to be part of, and it's a confluence of lots of things for Sam. It's in New York, the entertainment capital of the world, the Big Apple. It's Madison Square Garden, the world's greatest arena. And it's the energy of the crowd there. And it's Sam Rosen. Sam Rosen is part of that soundtrack and has been part of that soundtrack for four decades. And is a reason, I think, why so many people love the game in that area. He's just a... And you know what? Here's the thing. Such a good guy, such a good person. And when we talk to him, I hope that comes out, because he's just, he's a lovable guy who loves the sport, and he's a great friend. He really is.
I'm not in that friend category, but every time I've met him, he's treated me like that. Great to see you. And on my Mount Rushmore is Foster and Bob, Danny, and Sam. Now, you can debate and you can interchange. I'd love to hear from our listeners. Who's on your Mount Rushmore? Send us some notes.
Well, you forgot.
People.
Dan Kelly.
Yeah.
Bob Cole. Danny Gallivan. And I'm still thinking of the fourth.
And I didn't hear Foster, but I'm putting him in there.
Foster, you know, I don't want to get distracted, because that's a
he deserves to be in there, but
he's the first.
Yeah,
he's the first.
If I just did it to people that I listen to, I'd have to massage.
You know,
list.
Listen. I have recency bias and regional bias. Jim Robson is as good a radio play-by-play man as has ever existed in this game, doing the Vancouver Canucks for as long as he did. So there's a ton of people, and everybody in their own markets, which is one of the reasons why regional broadcasters and local broadcasters on radio and television in our sport are so important to the fabric of every team.
When Darren Dreger and Millard did the Wheat King games, that's a lot of people's Mount Rushmore.
No, that's in some coulee just outside of Brandon, okay?
And there's no mountain there.
And there's no mountains, that's right. You're down in a little bit of a valley down there, baby.
All right, okay, Sam's there.
Yeah. Okay, good.
He did. Oh, you think I was talking about Dreger and I just because I wanted to bring up that story? No, Sam.
No, I think I'm probably pretty sure that Dreger gave you $5 to mention his name. That's what I pretty figured.
That has happened. A toonie for sure. We'll get over to Sam Rosen, the great broadcaster of the New York Rangers, working for MSG, coming up on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Thinking we've had this great run of top-end coaches in the National Hockey League. It's about time we get somebody to really explain the game to us, isn't it, John?
Well, somebody who has been, I tell you what, when you think about 10 years and the 10 years of coaches, then there's 10 years of broadcasters.
Well, he Sam Rosen from the New York Rangers, MSG, coming in. Sam, you've been the guy that's just put people into management positions. You've been that mentor to people over the years.
I've done my best to get people better jobs. I always want them to get ahead in the world, make more money, be happy, and then look back and say, boy, Sam really helped me along the way. Maybe I should help him.
This has been a wonderful season from afar to watch the accolades and the respect that's been heaped upon you. What's it been to be the recipient of that?
Emotional, heartwarming, just thankful that I know so many good people. I thought about it. When we were on the road last week, I was sitting around the hotel room and I went through every city in the NHL and I said, I know some really good people in each of those cities. Yeah. And that really felt good. Now we go to some of those cities and the people come up and they just say some great things and they don't have to say them. They could just shake hands and say, nice going, Sam, nice career. But they say some things that really make you feel that you've touched people, that what I've tried to do has come across well, they've accepted it. And there's just an overall feeling that this camaraderie in the league that we work in and the league that we're around day in and day out is really very strong.
Well, I will tell you, I have watched almost every ceremony that has occurred in every building. You have the wave down. You have done a magnificent job of patent that the classic Sam wave now out of the broadcast booth, you know, and the kisses and everything like that. You've done you could be running for office now, Sam.
Well, that's an interesting thing. I think I've really been into politics all my life, and I think I've watched so many politicians that I've got it down, John. I've worked it very well. But I always think, here we are in this round building, and I want to make sure that the people on the right see me and the people on the left see me. So that's part of that political atmosphere that I think about.
By the way, that's as close as we're getting to politics on this show, okay?
Yes.
Oh, because I was going to say Sam could call the KHL-NHL Summit Series that's coming up.
Wow. Any day now. I don't know if Gary Bettman's going to go for it. Or the Players Association.
Well, when you consider that Marty Walsh is a good Democrat. why hockey? Why not baseball? Why not basketball?
You know, John, throughout my life and throughout my career, well, starting as a kid, I just grew up loving all sports. We played in the streets. We played in schoolyards. We played in parks. We played on cement. We played on grass. We played whatever sport was the sport of the day. Whoever had a football, we played football. Whoever had a basketball, we played basketball. Baseball, you had to be a little more organized, but we played softball in the schoolyards. I've loved all sports all my life, and I watch them, and I'm into them. And career-wise, I've always told younger people that I meet who aspire to come into broadcasting that you have to be able to say yes when the opportunity presents itself. And when a job opportunity came along, I was always able to say yes. When ESPN came on the air in 1979, the late Scotty Connell was the executive producer, and he hired me to do a college football game the first weekend they were on the air. And then all kinds of sports came on, and they were looking for programming. And they would call me and say, can you do women's field hockey? And I said, yeah, sure. And whether it was volleyball or lacrosse or baseball, whatever it was, I wanted to be able to say yes. And I tell people, be prepared. So what happens as I go along in my career, what presents itself? I get an opportunity at Madison Square Garden in 1977 to do basketball. And I do a radio backing up Marv Albert. They come to me the next year and ask, can you do hockey? And I said, of course I can do hockey. And I gave them tapes that I had done, a multitude of tapes. I was working for the now defunct United Press International Audio Network and covering games. I would do my morning sportscast, go to games at night, interview players and use those audio clips to send around to our stations. Well, while I was covering the games, part of the games, I'd go off to a corner of the press box and I'd do play-by-play. If it was hockey, I did a period of hockey. So I had all these tapes of hockey play-by-play to give to the MSG people. They liked it, and I'm still doing it.
So were you part of, when you talked about ESPN, not many people remember, but ESPN did hockey early in their lives.
Yes.
They owned the rights to the Hartford Whalers and the Washington Capitals.
They signed 10-game contracts with each team. And yes, I was part of that. And, you know, we did games. We had a situation where the roof collapsed in Hartford, and we did Hartford Whalers game in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And I remember going up to the booth. I was working with Denny Potvin, and I think at the time he was injured, he may have had a broken ankle. We had to climb this ladder to get up to the booth. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, here's a star of the NHL. What if he slips on this ladder and he won't be able to come back? But it was things like that. Washington, we worked at the old Cap Center, and it was hockey. We went and we did it. Lou Nanny, I worked with Lou Nanny on some games because he knew Scotty Connell very well, and Lou was my broadcast partner in some games. So it was an interesting experience, but it was my entree into national broadcast. I mean, they were coming on as a national network. And so it was a great experience where you had to play it down the middle with teams that I wasn't rooting for. It was terrific.
When you reflect on the start of your career in those days, like in Springfield or the Hartford Whalers, the actual art of play-by-play hasn't changed as much as the overall game and the presentation, or has it?
I think in my mind, and I think what's changed is when I was a kid, when we were kids, the play-by-play man controlled everything. It was all about the play-by-play guy who was doing it. Sometimes he was calling the game alone. Mm-hmm. And what evolved was the presence of the analyst. And the analyst became more and more important because he was the expert. He could explain the game. In football, there was John Madden, who became this huge, bigger-than-life personality, but also was a coach had been a coach in the NFL and knew the game. So he became the focal point. And Pat Summerall, his partner, was kind of the lead-in. And I think when it came to my career and the jobs that I had, I was working with, in 1986, John Davidson came in. Prior to that, when I started full-time on MSG TV, I worked 2 years with Phil Esposito. I was working with one of the superstars of the game. And Phil knew the game way better than I did. So it was always try to lead to Phil, give him something. You laugh, John. Phil.
Well, because I couldn't imagine you getting a word in edgewise anyway with Phil. So
Phil was, Phil, here's how I got words in edgewise, John. Phil never went to morning skates. I said, Phil, you have to go to morning skates, find out what's going on, find out who the player. No, I'll be a distraction. You do that. So we get to the game, and inevitably, some player would do something, and Phil would turn to me and say, where'd this guy come from, Sam? Who's this guy? How'd they get him? That was my entree. That was my ability to get my wording in. But when the puck was dropped, nobody knew the game better than Phil Wise and Howes, and mm-hmm. he was terrific in that way. And now, in 1986, I get Phil a good job as general manager of the Rangers. And now John Davidson comes back from working with you. John, you know that. You helped him along and helped mold his career. John Davidson comes back as a polished broadcaster, and he sets the standard. And he becomes the John Madden of hockey. And he's got this great personality, the ability to talk to every person at every level in hockey. And so my job, again, lead. It was important to lead to John, give John as much freedom to do his thing and explain the game and explain what was going on. And we had a 20-year run, and it was fantastic. But that's what I see evolving, Darren, that what happened is that the analyst, if people saw the analyst as the expert and they enjoyed listening to them, like Phil, like John, like Joe Micheletti for 19 years we've been together, I think that became the emphasis. And the analyst became very, very important to all broadcasts.
Yeah, but listen, not to get on a soapbox about this, but Darren's asked the question. You still
don't blame
do play
me.
By
do not blame me.
No,
for this.
I'm giving you credit here. Okay, I'm just because you think I'm mad at you all the time, I'm not. You know, just, you still do play by play when the puck is in play, when it's in both offensive zones. Everybody on that broadcast, including JD, including Joe, Phil didn't, but that's another story. They know that that's your job then.
Yes.
That doesn't happen as much anymore, Sam. We have broadcasters across this league now that think that they're just having a full-blown conversation. I'm still a traditionalist. I want to hear you say he shoots, he scores.
And I like that. But that comes also from broadcasters working together, John, and yeah. having confidence in one another, trusting one another. I trusted Phil. Well, we were together only 2 years, but I certainly trusted JD and I trust Joe. They know if a play is developing, they see it. They know that they have to step back.
Right.
The obvious thing about television is that we can see what's going on. The fan can see it. And so if a story goes a little long and maybe gets involved and maybe reaches into a play developing, I think that's okay. I think if a goal is scored, I think both broadcasters, even the producer and the director, feel the same way in that, yeah, it should have been called. And right. That's part of the learning experience. To me, it doesn't happen all that much. And I watch a lot of games, and I think the play-by-play guy has his opportunity to call the game pretty much. And a lot of it has to do with rapport and trust.
You know, I've talked to both Joe and John about it. Is there is that the word trust you bring up is so important. Both Joe and John actually, for the most part, when they're working with you, don't watch where the puck is. They watch behind the play because they're listening to you describe it. So they know what's going on because of your description. And then they can find out the periphery about why things happen. And again, that goes back to the trust between you and your color commentator.
Very much so. I agree with you there, John. I also think that that's where their expertise comes in. The understanding of the game. When I mentioned Phil in our 2 years together, once the puck was dropped, he knew why a goal happened. He knew why a play developed. He knew why a goalie made a save. He understood the game so well. Having been such an integral part of the Bruins and their ability and their scoring and the people that he played with. Mm-hmm. These guys know the game so well. JD studied the game and understood it. And it was always, and JD, when I say he set the standard, it was always about why. Tell people why this happened. It was never just repeat, oh, there's a replay and he's there over there and the puck came to him and he shot it and it went in. No, it was always about what happened, what you said, behind the play. This guy checked him. It opened up a lane and the guy flew in down the wing and had a great shot top shelf. And I think the same thing with Joe Micheletti. They understand why a play happened, why a goal was scored or why a goal wasn't scored. And their ability to tell the people why that happened makes them the best at what they do.
You've watched enough now. You could be that guy. No, I mean.
I throw in every once in a while. I try not to be the expert because I never played the game. I played a lot of baseball.
Never stopped me. That's never stopped me, Sam.
Well, having been around the game for as long as I have and having talked to the people in the game, the coaches, the assistant coaches, the players, I've certainly understand the game, but I can't tell you what it feels like to shoot that puck and have it glance off the post or what it feels like to shoot the puck and have it blocked or to shoot that puck and score the goal and the feeling that you have. But I have an appreciation for it, having talked to players and having talked to coaches. And I think that's been one of my strengths and the strengths of my work with JD and with Joe is always to get the angle of the other team and understand what the other team is trying to do and the knowledge of what our team, the Rangers, that we work for and work with, what they're trying to do and put it all together.
So we're taping this on Wednesday morning. The Calgary Flames were at the Garden last night. You did that game. When would your prep for a Flames-Rangers game start?
Probably maybe a week, 5 days, maybe a week beforehand when I start getting lineups together and seeing who's playing with whom, what the lineups look like. And
even for the visiting team?
What's that?
For the visiting team, you do it a week before? Wow.
Yeah, I've got lineups. We're going to California next week, and I've got lines of the LA Kings, the Anaheim Ducks, and I don't have the Sharks yet, but I'll pick that up. The Sharks are later on. But we will be in L.A. on Tuesday, so I've gathered some information on them. If I see a clip anywhere on an L.A. player, I'll take that with me. I've got things for the weekend, this weekend coming up with Vancouver on Saturday. I've got their lines for the last couple of games, and I'll try to get there's so much information out there. It's great. Get the game by games, see where the game, where the team was strong early in the season, see where the team is now. What have they done in the last 6, 8, or 10 games? So, excuse me. I think that's where it starts. And as we get closer to that game, that's where I'll look for specific information on players that we really want to focus on during the game. And then the great thing is you Google players now. If there's a player I don't know about, I Google and find out, okay, now I know where he was born. Now I know how old he is. Now I know the name of his parents and his siblings. And then I can see his entire career going back to junior hockey or college hockey. And it really helps the information, and you use it where you can. If you don't use it, nobody knows about it. But if you have it, then it's just a little thing you can drop in. Oh, this guy played 2 years at Northeastern or at Boston College, whatever it is, you can add to that at the right time.
But it still wouldn't have helped Phil.
So. No, that's Phil. I don't know if Phil knows how to Google anybody.
I'm trying to figure out how much busier your game days must have been pre-internet if you've got all this stuff already.
On the phone constantly, you know, on the phone.
And how many newspaper clippings do you? We had to take scissors on the airplane. They wouldn't let us take scissors on the airplane.
I've always been a newspaper fanatic. We've had newspapers since I was a kid. When I was a kid, on the corner candy store, they had all the New York papers. You had the Times, the Daily News, the Daily Mirror, the Journal American, the Herald Tribune. I mean, we just keep getting all the papers. The New York Post had an early edition and an afternoon edition to update what was going on. So I've always been gathering newspapers, but now that's declined because there's so much instant information on the internet. That's the way to go. And with the information, having the phones at hand, it really helps for immediacy, and it helps you do your job even better than ever before.
Not to date ourselves, Sam, but the league stats used to only come out once a week.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Not on every
Tuesdays,
day.
Right? On Tuesdays. Well,
the problem now is they want to save money on paper. So certain places, you don't get the league stats at the morning skate.
Oh,
you have to wait till the game is on or till you get to the booth at 5:30 to look at the league stats. Yeah. So those are the changes that we have to adapt to.
Yeah, exactly.
Sam Rosen with us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Continue with more of this great discussion right after this. The best part about this, because we're recording this on Zoom, is as Sam talks, John smiles and nods. It's like you two are in some kind of
Well, we've been sink. Together a few times.
Yeah.
We've been together a few times. Sam is lucky enough. He got invited into a special club. About 20 years ago. Dave Hodge and Joe Micheletti and I worked together in the early 90s in Minnesota. And once we all settled down in our new careers later that decade, every time the Rangers have come to town, we have a dinner. And Sam is now part of the club. It's at least four people in the club. The club's been as big as 18 or 19 people at times when guys get invited to dinner. And we just sit, as we did when the Rangers were in early this season to celebrate Sam's final year. We sit and talk about almost everything about the game. And, you know, if we're lucky enough, we have special guests show up, like Glenn Sather has showed up and Brendan Shanahan has showed up. And what's really good is they show up, they show up and pay, which is really good.
That's the best. It never gets better than that.
And then the first time, I think you were there Sam, the Rangers came to Calgary. John and I were working together in Calgary in 84 and 85, and you and Phil were doing the Ranger games. I don't know if you remember this, but we ended, all ended up at dinner at John and Diana's house in South Calgary. And Phil was on his soapbox this night. And then he and I got into a huge argument at dinner time about how to do broadcasting, because Phil had been a broadcaster for 8 days, so he was an expert. And to this day, Phil and I have become great friends just because of that famous argument we had at the Davidson house.
Phil, as we all know, is one of the strong personalities who ever lived and continues to be even these days. I love to listen on satellite radio, and I'll hear parts of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and Dave Mishkin is calling the game, and there's Phil in the background going, what did he do? What did that guy do there? Yeah. What kind of call is that by the referee? I mean, Phil lets it all out and always has, as he did. I don't remember that specific dinner, John, but it's great that you recall it, because I can visualize the two of you having that argument.
So actually, I don't know Dave Mishkin, because I'm like you. I listen. I still love listening to radio, Sam. I really do. I love it. And I think Dave Mishkin deserves a Purple Heart. I would give him an award for those home games and works when he's working with Phil, because he does an amazing job of making sure Phil gets his voice in and we can still hear what's going on in the game. Hey, the other, I want to talk to you about, you mentioned talking to people and the impact. Two names came to mind quickly for me. First of all, when you guys went to Winnipeg, Scott Arneil, the coach of the Jets, the first thing he did in the morning press conference was pay tribute to you, because you had been with Scott, obviously, when he was an assistant coach with the Rangers. Yeah. And then in Columbus, Jet Grieve, the goaltender, who was a Henrik Lundqvist fanatic, I mean, had to meet you. What do those types of events mean when it's the shoes on the other foot? You know, we're the outsiders, they're the insiders. Now the insiders are saying that you're the reason that I'm where I am.
It's a tremendous honor. When I mentioned to you before, the heartwarming feeling of someone coming up to you and saying, you're the reason I got into this. You inspired me. I loved listening to your broadcast. It reassures me that what I've done has value, has meaning, and has touched people and affected them. And with Scott Arneil, look, we had one of the, you know, another strong personality as the head coach in John Tortorella. And I know John for years. I knew him when he was an assistant at Buffalo with John Muckler. He came to New York, and what happened was John was tougher as a head coach on his own broadcasters than he was on visitors. And I find that to this day. We go to Philadelphia, John is all smiles. When he was in Columbus, he was great to talk to. We talked about his family. We talked about what his kids were doing. We talked about his love of animals. But John was tough to deal with as a head coach of the Rangers. The man I went to was Scott Arneil. And the man I went to with John Tortorella was Mike Sullivan. Mm-hmm. He was my go-to guy. With Alain Vigneault, Scott Arneil was his lead assistant coach. Alain, one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, always smiling, friendly, had a nice word to say. Didn't give you much information about what was happening in the game that night, the previous night. Scott Arneil was my go-to guy. And again, you establish a rapport, a trust. That word trust always keeps coming up, because they need to trust me and I trust them that they're giving me information, but they believe that they know that I'll use it in a proper fashion. And Scott Arneil was great, great to deal with wherever he's gone. When he went to Washington, the same way, always a person with welcoming you and believing that we could converse on a level where he could give me information and trust me to use it the proper fashion. And to have him start his morning news conference in Winnipeg was terrific. I mean, it was an honor for me that he would single me out and say the nice things that he did. And again, that means that I had built a strong trust with him, and I learned from him. That's the other part. I think when I had difficulty with John Tortorella, again, only when he was the Rangers coach, I always felt that I wanted to learn from the coaches. And I think with John, he felt that I was trying to come up with a scoop or something like that. But now, as I said before, when John, we'd visit it with the Rangers in Columbus, we'd have great conversations and get good information about players. Same thing in Philadelphia. And I don't know why that happened, but I've always tried to impress upon the coaches that I wanted to know more about the game and what was happening. It wasn't just to come up with scoops and to try and hurt anybody with information that fans really didn't need to know.
There's a lot of people out there who have attended these various media sessions going, Sam Rosen got the same treatment we did? That's so cool. I love that.
Yes.
You've called so many games at MSG. What's your favorite part about Madison Square Garden?
You know, Darren, we refer to it as the world's most famous arena, and everywhere we go, people know Madison Square Garden. But for me, I went there as a kid in the old garden. I used to go to high school basketball championships. I went to track and field, the Millrose games. I've seen volleyball matches there. It's I did tennis matches, women's tennis, the Virginia Slims in the 80s. It's just the aura of this edifice in New York City, which is part of the heartbeat of New York. Everyone knows Madison Square Garden, big time. Everything is big time. The great concerts that have been there, all the stars want to play Madison Square Garden. We've had presidents nominated there at political conventions. It's a place that everyone knows in all areas of life, and it's a special place. And when I walk into it, I always feel that way. I'll walk by the Zamboni entrance and always take a look into the arena just to get that feeling of, wow, the garden is here, and in a couple of hours, it's going to be rocking. And I think that feeling exists. And I think the people who work there feel the same way. And I've been lucky enough, they've asked me to MC what they call Legends Nights for several years, where they honor people who have worked there for 25 years, for 50 years. And I've been able to work there for well over 40 years, and it's still a thrill to walk into the building because it's Madison Square Garden.
You can't pick 94. Give me another night that you are reminded of when you look back. You can't pick, and this game will last for a lifetime. You can't pick that.
Oh, I can't pick that one. Wow. That's a tough one. In the modern, quote-unquote, Madison Square Garden, which was built in 1968 or opened in 1968 and has been redone, remodeled, and updated a couple of times, five-goal performance by Mika Zibanejad always comes to the forefront. Stéphane Matteau Game 7 against the Devils. That, to me, has always been the best playoff series that I've ever been around, and never had the thrill of broadcasting. That's hockey. Basketball, I was the statistician on the New York Knicks radio network in 1970 when Willis Reed limped onto the court in Game 7, hit two shots, went off, didn't play again, and Walt Frazier led the New York Knicks to the NBA championship, their first NBA championship. I was there. I was doing the stats. The Marv Albert was calling the game locally on WNBC in New York radio, and the Knicks had a great run in the middle of the season in January. They won 18 straight games, and they set up a radio network of small stations upstate New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Jim Gordon, who was my mentor and my predecessor on New York Rangers TV, was the play-by-play man. And I knew Jim because we worked together while I was in college. I worked at WYNS as a person in the newsroom gathering, helping the newscasters gather their information. Jim was the morning newsman, and we became friends, and he was my mentor, and he hired me as his statistician on the Knicks radio network. And I was there when the Knicks won the NBA championship. And that's one of the great moments of all time.
I worked with Jim Gordon, too. I was actually a young producer for Hockey Night. In the old days, they assigned a Canadian producer to every time a U.S. team came to Canada. And I was the guy I was the low end of the pole. So all the guys wanted to stay in Toronto. So I got shipped to Montreal. And I did a lot of games with Jim and Bill Chadwick, in that secondary position at the Forum, and was there for the 79 run.
Jim was one of my, I can honestly say he was my idol in broadcasting, because he could do it all. He was a morning newsman. WYNS radio went all news in the early 60s, and Jim, I got hired while I was in college in 1966, and I would watch Jim do the morning news. His shift was from 5 a.m. to 1 p.m. He'd finish his shift, he'd leave, he'd get on a plane, go to wherever, Detroit, Chicago, Boston, and do a New York Knicks game. He was doing Knicks basketball at the time on WOR television. He'd do the game, he'd fly back and sleep in the lounge. He'd get three or four hours sleep, get up and do his newscast again. And I marveled at what he could do. He had a great voice, great knowledge. He later went on to do Giants football on radio. He was the news director at WNEW radio in New York. And I just thought he was great at what he did. His work ethic was tremendous, and it was great to work around him. And he taught me what it was all about. And then, you know, as I mentioned, being his statistician, what did he do? He knew that I wanted this to be my career, and where he's doing the games on the radio, he's doing the Knicks games, and we get to halftime, and he would turn to me and say, "You know what? These are your stats. You read them on the air." And that was my exposure on the network. He let me do the stats at halftime and the stats at the end of the game. And I worked for one of the stations in Connecticut that was on the network, and they had heard me. So when I applied for a job, they knew who I was because they had heard my name on the Knicks radio network. And again, I can't thank the late Jim Gordon enough. He guided me to this career, and I'm very fortunate to have known him and to have idolized what he did.
I'm always amazed at how Kenny balances all the different, Kenny Albert balances all the different sports, but you, you did this before him, and you talked about how Jim was multi-talented in his different adventures. You never turned down a job, ever. Like you had, what, 12, 13 jobs at one point at the same time?
I don't know if it was that many, but, you know, it goes back to what I said earlier. Never say no.
Right.
Yeah. And I tell young people who talk about it, who want to go into broadcasting, be knowledgeable. Don't limit yourself to one sport. You may love hockey. You may love baseball. You may love golf, whatever it is. But be able to get experience. What happens when you apply for a job? The first thing they want to know, and you know this, John, what experience? Where have you worked before? What have you done? And if you have none, you're out the door. They don't want to, they don't have the time to talk with you. If you have that experience, and you can say, well, I've done basketball here and I did baseball here, but I love hockey and I know hockey, well, we'll try him on hockey, or we'll try her on hockey. And I think that's something that I've always felt is very, very important. It helped me in those early days of ESPN. As I mentioned, all those, I did a table tennis match once. I did Australian rules football. Whatever came along, I wanted to be able to. And so one time, the late Scotty Connell, who was executive producer, said to me, is there any sport you can't do? I said, there may be one or two that I can't do, Scotty, but if I can't do them, I'll find out how to do them. And that was something that, again, I prided myself working with an expert on women's field hockey. What did I know about women's field hockey? But the person sitting next to me, she knew everything about the game. And I made sure that I didn't try to be the expert. I let her be the expert. And, oh, nice shot over there. Oh, well, this is why it happened. She would handle that. I would handle the shot and the goal, or the shot and the save, or the shot that went wide. But I think that's always been my approach, is to make sure you know as much as you can, and don't be the expert if you don't know. And I did.
And then there's the College World Series too, Sam. I mean, you were the voice of the College World Series for how many years?
Yeah, from 1984 through 1988.
Okay.
Did the College World Series. Great event in Omaha, Nebraska. There was a great bar there. Paulie's. It had every baseball cap you've ever seen in the world was hanging in Paulie's, and we had a great time. I worked with some wonderful people. I worked with the late Joe Morgan, great baseball man, great knowledge. Jim Price, who was a catcher with the Tigers. Jim Cott and I worked together. I'll never forget, we did a game in Arizona at Arizona State. And Jim Cott and I go in to do the game, and the coach, I believe his name was Jim Brock, was the coach at Arizona State. I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, we're sitting with him in the dugout. We look out, and there's Barry Bonds out in left field. And so we say to Brock, tell us about Barry Bonds. He said, he needs to get out of here. He doesn't belong here in college. He's ready for the major leagues. Next year, Barry Bonds was in the major leagues, and we know had his fabulous career. But just things like that, incidents, and the ability to be in different places. You talk about college baseball, going to Oxford, Mississippi to do college baseball, places that I probably would never have thought about going to in my entire life, but that was wonderful, a wonderful experience. And, it's just been part of a joyous career that I've been able to experience because I grew up loving sports.
Mm-hmm. It's an obvious one, but it's one that I need answered, and I've always wanted to ask you. So here's my opportunity.
Okay.
It's a power play goal. Did that happen organically, or how did it come about? Because if I'm watching a game, and my men's league game, and we score on the power play, I look next to the guy, and it's a power play goal. I hear you. Like, it doesn't matter what level it is. I hear you.
In the early 80s, I did public address announcing at Giant Stadium for the New York Cosmos, Cosmos Soccer.
Yes.
The North American Soccer League came up, expanded too quickly and never really took off. But the Cosmos were the fixture. They brought in Pelé in the late 70s.
Giorgio Canalia.
They brought in all of these. Canadia was the striker. Alberto was the defenseman. Beckenbauer was the midfielder. They brought in these aging superstars, but they would play international matches, friendlies, that would get 60,000 people in Giant Stadium. The league games were about 30,000, 35,000. It was the best in the league still. And so I was doing public address announcing, and there were 30,000 in the crowd in a 65,000-70,000 seat stadium, so it was half empty. They wanted some energy. They wanted excitement. So when the Cosmos scored, I would say, that's a Cosmos goal, but with more energy. I don't want to do it too loud here, but that's a Cosmos goal. So, and now we get into hockey, and the Rangers, in I think it was 1987, but I've got to look that up to be sure, had one season where they scored over 100 power play goals. And it seemed as if every time they were on the power play, they scored. And that was the evolution. It became, it's a power play goal. Not as exuberant as I do it now, but that's the way it started. And as people accepted it and people seemed to like it, it became, I put more and more energy and more enthusiasm into it. And as we know, special teams became a very big part of hockey, and power plays are very, very important. And so now when they score, unfortunately, the Rangers have scored only one power play goal in the last 8 games, and that's bothering me. We have a meeting with the players.
As long as Tarch isn't the coach, you got a chance. Foster had, he shoots, he scores. Lloyd Pettit had the famous shot in a goal. Is that's your trademark now, rather than?
I would say yes. Everyone, when you meet people, and they want you to do a video or they want you to sign something, they always ask for it's a power play goal. And I think it's fun, it's enjoyable, and it's a big part of the game. So I don't think I'm overemphasizing it. I think people understand that it's a big part of the game. And
Foster and Billy Hewitt used to sign their autographs, he shoots, he scores, and their name. So
really?
Yep.
Did not know that.
I'm in good company.
Yes. Yes, you are. Hey, listen, I got to tell you, one of the amazing thing, like, you don't do national games in hockey, but you have gone to every rink and you have been saluted in every rink. It speaks to you and your trust and loyalty. It also speaks to the passion of our fans. How much they love the game, so they watch Ranger games. It's got to be heartwarming, Sam. It really does.
I think one of the best feelings I've had this season was when we went to Salt Lake City. There's a new city on the NHL itinerary, and fans came into the arena, local fans, Ranger fans who've traveled from all over. Ranger fans travel very, very well. and they lined up. The broadcast location for the visitors is down low in the Delta Center. It's by the one of the blue lines, and people can walk down the aisle and come right near the booth. And people were lined up to come over and say hello and take a selfie and whatever. And it was a great feeling. Here we were in this new city on the tour, and fans were lined up to say hello. And that really made me feel very good about everything and everything I've done and the way people have treated me. And it was that was a special moment for me.
Well, you've been great for the game. Pure and simple.
Thank you, John.
This has been awesome. It's like a crossover episode in a way, because John and I feel just like our audience. Absolutely pleasure to be and honor to be in your audience, listening to you and be able to ask you some questions. Congratulations on an amazing career, and we will miss you, but you've earned every accolade that you've received.
Enjoy the next 3 weeks, Sam.
Darren, John, thanks. It's been a great run. It has been wonderful to meet people in all walks of life, to be friends with you, John, to know you as long as I have, to take knowledge from you. It's been, you got a lot of that in there. And it's been very special. And Darren, anytime I get a chance to talk hockey, I love to talk. I mean, my mouth starts and I'll go, Phil might have more. He might go longer than me, but, I'm up there. I love to talk. And, I think the great feeling is walking out of the garden and people stop and say hello. They just want to talk. And that's what I do.
I have a wall of fame just outside my office of different things that I've been able to do. And there's a picture of Darren Elliott, Sam Rosen, and I in Vegas. Oh, the first year that I was here. And it's right there. There's John Shannon's up there, too. But it's one of my favorites.
Thank you.
Say hello to Jill.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed
it. My sheet is just full. Yeah, I know. Notes.
We ran out of time, too, and I forgot to ask Sam about boxing, because he loves boxing.
I wanted to know how many sports he's called, if there's an actual list. Because John Garrett, over the years, John Garrett would keep track of all the different play-by-play people that he's worked with. That's an actual list. I wonder if Sam has a list of sports that he's called. Table tennis.
Table tennis. Don't you just pause and then...
Yes.
Do commentary when the ball's not in play?
Yes.
Okay.
That's my favorite. I'm really good at table tennis.
Are you?
Yeah.
You'd be good at, did you do that at the Olympics?
No. I did water polo, beach volleyball, field hockey, track and field. I think that was was about it. Field hockey was the weirdest one to get my head around, because you can only shoot one way. You're not allowed to.
No backhands.
Yeah, it's like,
what? And you can't have your stick over your waist.
Yeah, that's the part that that I had. But I was thinking power play goal.
So when you think of other than it's a power play goal, when you think of Sam, what do you think of?
I think about the Rangers call. It's going to last a lifetime.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And, it turned out that it's going to have to last a lifetime.
it just might. Yeah. The fascination for me is that was at a time in hockey where Sam and John did that game together, and that was the regional broadcast in New York City. And there was a national broadcast on Fox. I believe it was Fox. It was ESPN, because Gary Thorne called it.
Oh, Gary Thorne.
And so... But Sam's call has reverberated much longer than anybody else's. Bob Cole called the game for Hockey Night in Canada at the Garden that night. But it's Sam's great call on the regional side that has existed for so long. And if you go anywhere and say, we need, you know, to do sound on tape of that, the Rangers winning the cup, everybody will gravitate towards Sam Skull. So,
you remember about that 94 final?
Nathan Lafayette hitting the crossbar.
Yes. Yes. Of all the things, the Rangers ending the drought and Messier's march and guarantee and letting a 3-1 lead get away and the hockey at its height. I remember Nathan Lafayette and hitting the iron in the last couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Why does that stick with us? And you knew that. We talked about that.
If you're a hockey fan in Canada, you know, the Canucks are the team that came closest to winning the Stanley Cup to end the drought. Now, the drought was only a year because Canadians won it in 93.
Yeah.
But 94 and 2011 were the two closest to win a cup for a Canadian-based team. So the 94 Stanley Cup, I'll tell you right now, and I know we're supposed to be talking about Sam, but the 94 Stanley Cup and the 94 playoffs got me the job at Hockey Night in Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Why? My the second time I was at Hockey Night, when I returned as executive producer, because they were making a decision to hire a new executive producer after that playoff. And I pleaded for an interview. And I had watched every night of the Stanley Cup playoffs that year because I had just finished the Lillehammer Olympics, was looking for a new job. I'd watched every playoff game of every series that year. And so when I sat down with CBC management, I walked in and there was this group, this dark room with five people in the room. And I sat at the end of the table and I spoke for 2 hours about every game in the Stanley Cup playoffs without a piece of paper in my hand. And they said, "You remembered all that?" I said, "I watched every night, and here's what was right, here's what was wrong, and here's what we should do better." And I walked out, and they offered me the job 10 minutes later.
You remembered all that at the top of your head? Like Sam remembers call letters, station letters over the years.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, I do that too. You remember all the call letters of the stations you worked for.
Yeah. There's some good ones too.
CJVR. Well, I'll tell you what. I always loved stations that only had three letters. So CKX, that was massive.
That was good. CJVR in Melfort, GX94 in Yorkton.
Well, that doesn't count. The new name stuff, all the marketing stuff, that doesn't count.
CFRY in Portage. They thought we were a restaurant for a while. C-Fry.
Oh,
well, and Swap and Shop there.
Enough about that. Here's the other thing. Let me just say this. Sam never got his due, and that was kind of where I was going. Sam never got his due, in my opinion, as a national broadcaster of this sport. And so we've run through Fox, we've run through NBC, we've run through ABC, ESPN, and Sam, you know, in this century, Sam has never really been given that opportunity, and I don't understand why, because he's that good. I would put him up against any broadcaster in the United States.
And likable.
Broadcaster, and, well, they're all likable, you know.
Well, no. I mean, people have their preferences. People love listening to Sam.
This is a classy.
That's what I mean by that.
A classy, great style, effective play-by-play. I mean, if there is somebody that's working now, and that's why I talked to him about how much he does play-by-play and how much analysis in the Rangers shows. If he does it, it is that they have a great balance. He doesn't over-talk. He doesn't over-analyze. And the color man, Joe Micheletti, doesn't talk too much when Joe's supposed to be doing play-by-play. He's got a beautiful, you know, the simplest things. He's got a beautiful voice to listen to. Mm-hmm.
He does. Here's my quote that I'm going to put on a T-shirt. Don't be the expert if you don't know. Sam Rosen. He may not be the first person to say it, but I just wrote it down, and that will stick with me. And I will do my best to try and not to violate that for the end of the week.
And by the way, most of the guys we worked with over the last 15 years... I've got, there's, for some reason, there's this guy in Boca Raton, Florida that I'm thinking of right now.
I don't know, but I'm an expert. That's his t-shirt.
We got to go. Okay. This show's too long. This show's too long now.
But there's a reason.
Yes, I know.
All right. We violated our own rule of going over an hour.
Yeah.
Because of Sam.
Hey, Friday, we're back on Coaches Week. It's Coaches Week, by the way, on 100% Hockey this week. So. Spencer Carberry on
needs
Friday.
To get on that. Who's on Friday?
Spencer Carberry.
Ooh. They won again. They're on a roll. And continue to get it. They've got a 10-point lead. I know we got a 10-point lead in the division. John, I'm sorry. I wish you had more time to respond to that, but I got to head out of here. Thanks for being along.
Just along for the ride.
Coattails, baby.